The Everly Brothers and Dream. So enjoy this. Don't you love that hair? This is good stuff. I remember, and this is when I'm a kid. This is my parents. This is the generation that was in power as I'm a kid growing up in church. And so I'd see that kind of hair by these guys that'd be the deacons or the... We had deacons and trustees in my Baptist church. And these are the guys that would be in the foyer. They're in charge at this point. And they always had... And so they held on to that. A lot of what we hold on to as dear is what we experienced when we were young. Okay, we continue. A lot of times if you talk to people of my generation, we liked 70s and 80s music. And so we tie into that very easily. And so when these songs are on for a silent generation person, unless they were earlier silent, because a lot of them are big band, they're still holding on to a lot of the GI generation. But rock and roll starts. And it's interesting, this name Silent. Let me read to you a quote. And it's on the back of, some of you picked up again the generations of the last 500 years. On the back are some facts concerning that. But this is Time Magazine, 1951, saying that about this generation coming up here. The children of this generation are unimaginative, withdrawn, unadventurous, and overly cautious. They are the silent generation. While the name stuck, the characteristics didn't. We see stuff later talking about them. Silence, that's the generation, silence, have enjoyed a life of rising affluence, few war casualties, low crime, suicide, and unemployment rates. They have ridden the escalator of prosperity with a tender social conscience, becoming exceptional mediators and mentors. The stuffing sandwich between the greatness of the GI generation and the power of the boomers. And so this is the generation between the greatest generation or GI generation and the baby boomers. Let me read some other things about them. With about 50 million live births, the silent generation is the smallest generation in the last 100 years of American history. Of those, approximately 22.25 million ages 69 to 89 are alive today. They are characterized as cautious, self-sufficient, private, and well-disciplined in personal and financial matters. Patriotic and trusting of the government due to America's rise as a superpower after the Great Depression and World War II. They also made up a majority of the soldiers in the Korean War. Reliable, they are the only living generation to work in the same job, often at the same company, accept annual increases, benefits, take mandatory retirement 65, and never complain about it. Committed to mainstream religion, 90% say religion is and always has been a part of my life. Caring, thoughtful, socially responsible, sharing and contributing to those less fortunate inside and outside their own circle of family, friends, and church. Surprised at their longevity due to advances in healthcare, they are the happiest generation in America today. Now, remember, these are painting with a broad brush. I'd like you to watch this next video of a lady being interviewed that she's looking back on growing up at that time in her life, and then another gentleman's observation of some changes that we made, and then I'll make some observations after it's done.
Catch a falling star and put it in your pocket, never let it fade away. Catch a falling star and...
Makes our generation things that comes to my mind that makes
falling star and hold it in your pocket, save it for me.
One of the things that comes to my mind that makes our generation different is the sense of personal security and safety that I had growing up in a neighborhood here in Charlotte. I never knew what it was to be fearful. I never knew what it was to see violence. I never knew what it was to have a sense of fear about going to school. And that has changed a great deal. So in our generation, that was one of the things that I think was, there was a sense of community and just personal security that I don't think exists anymore.
I guess one of the things, though, that does kind of me in the business was a time where a transition really began from the independent businessman to the corporations, the rural growth corporations. And, you know, the days of the corner drugstore or corner grocery store are virtually gone. And what we've seen over all those years is the growth and consolidation of these large companies. And so I think what really was unique, and at least in our generation, was is that if you could get a job with one of these large corporations and do well and progress, then you could have a good life.
For the first time, at least in my family, women were thinking of going to college.
Thank you. Observations. Okay, first of all, his observation as a businessman, does that make sense as you think about your grandpa and how he was viewing life, or your dad, how they were viewing life? I remember, even in Chicago, growing up in the corner store, we had a Puerto Rican store, is what we had. Every neighborhood in Chicago had a Puerto Rican store, and that was the one. You could get groceries, but or you'd go to the Jewel Tea Company. That's what my mom ran up and checked. Jewel and Osco, that's what she would go to. And or we would go to for all of the groceries. But when you were running out of something, you had the Puerto Rican store that you'd go to, and they had not just they had pop, which you know you'd go around and you try to find empty bottles and wash them out and bring them in. You get a deposit, and you were able to spend that money on candy or toys or things like that. But as time went on, there was a corner drugstore. I worked at the corner drugstore. As time goes on, the Walmarts and the Walgreens and all those different things start to take over. And so Silent Generation people look at that, and they don't look at that as good. They look at that as something that this big group of people is taking over. We like our neighborhood drugstore. We like our neighborhood store. But let me see how you guys viewed what that lady was saying. Remember what she was saying? It was a time of safety. They immediately put a picture of the show Father Knows Best with Robert Young. Any observations? Anything that you saw there? Yeah, Yolanda.
That struck me. This is my parents' generation and his parents were word for word everything on this description. Mine are the last couple of years of that generation. But with my parents having moved here, Mom is just always so hyper aware of how dangerous St. Louis is. Well, she lived in Dallas, Fort Worth. You cannot tell me it's any different.
Right, they kind of kill the president.
But she just...
But that was during the Silent Generation time.
It makes me kind of understand why it stands out so much to her.
Right.
To me, it just seems like this is how it is.
Right. Yep. Good. Anybody else? Yes.
I noticed in that picture, his whole family is looking at him and growing up like he's the center of the family, and there's some respect there.
Yeah.
And it's quite the painting that the media is trying to show of America's men is quite.
Or for a family, like Homer Simpson, Roseanne's husband. I mean, the show's shifted. Everybody Loves Raymond. It's shifted. Another observation. Anybody else? Observations when they watch that? Yeah.
Well, my dad worked, though, and my mom was always home. So she was always there until we got to be older teenagers and she went and got a part-time job. But, that you know, she was always there.
Sure.
It was very secure.
Did you go home for lunch when you were in grade school?
No.
Okay. You did. Okay. And so, okay. So you see that kind of thing. Something that struck me, though, is she's white.
And she said that. Now you might go, well, thank you, Mr. Amazing Observations, okay? But would a black lady or a black young man say, I never was worried about anything. We were completely safe. Or another, I don't know how she would have viewed or they would view it. But when you're white, you would, I think a lot of people, as they look back on that, it was the golden time of American history. It's Richie and Popsy, you know, going to the corner, going to Big Al's and or Arnold's, and they're enjoying it. The Fonz walks in. He causes a little bit of trouble, but he gets the Fonz, you know. And I know that's a 70s show pointing back to the 50s. But you see that, and so the observation that comes to my mind is, as a millennial would look at that, they would go, unless they're just like, okay, I'll give it to you that was a great time. But was it a great time for everybody? I don't know. There may have been families that would have been fine with the pecking order and how things go. But that's what struck me as I was looking at it. Well, let's look at the notes for a second here. As we look at the silent generation. I want you to look, once again, look at the first page there under silent facts. The low birth rate here. Born mostly during an era of depression and war, the silent were the product of a birth rate trough. Okay? If war is going on, if depression is going on, I don't know if I want to have kids. I don't know if I want to bring them into this. And so I'm stopping from having children. Now, when does the boom start? When Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, okay? Now, we won. So we're gonna have kids, we're gonna have a lot of them. It's the, you know, you'll see the picture of the snake that swallows the rat, and it's going, the boomers are the rat in the middle of that snake of time, all right? And it's huge, and we're gonna pick up the ramifications of that. I mean, we'll get to that next week when we're talking about boomers, but there's a ramifications of that generation coming to retirement and being taken care of. And then as you see the Gen X and the millennials having to take care of the boomers, and then abortion hit, and all those people are taken out. It's just interesting how, as time goes by, what that's going to look like. So they later became the only generation to have fewer members per cohort than both the generations born just before it and just after it. During the 1930s, the U.S. population grew by only 7%. Okay? Then there's a rise. Look at this in economic terms. The silent life cycle has been a straight line from a cashless childhood to the cusp of affluent elderhood, the smoothest and fastest rising path of any generation for which income data are available. In the immediate post-war years, barely 1% of youth between 10 and 15 were in the labor force, the lowest child labor force participation rate of the 20s. From ages 20 to 40, silent households showed this century's steepest rise in real per capita income and per household wealth. So this generation looks back. So if your grandfather ever looks at you and he don't get it, why you'd be unhappy? First of all, haven't we given you everything? So the millennials are kind of frustrated because they're looking back at this person and they're saying, I love you, Grandpa, or great-grandpa, but you don't get the time. And in their mind, they're going, you've been given everything. And my job went like this, and so why can't you get a job? And so you'll see that frustration in the generations, not all of them. And by the way, as I speak, I'm broad brushing it, remember. I'm broad brushing it here, but I'm trying to make sense of a generational time here. Look at how they look at marriage and babies. Yeah, did you have something, John?
Don't believe that the child labor force rate was real low because they worked as a family to produce something in the cashless society so that they all had something to live with. They didn't have the money that came from that. And they didn't see that as youth, but they did see it later on in life after they got money for what they did, but they still worked hard.
Yeah, excellent point. Excellent point. The silent were the earliest marrying and earliest babying generation in American history. Did you hear that? Men married at an average age of 23, women at 20.
1931, 35 female cohorts were the most fertile, thank you, most fertile of the 20th century. 94% of them became mothers. Wow, yeah.
They had no technology to occupy.
Yeah, nothing slowed down. They were, yeah.
Technology changed.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there, yeah, definitely. That's a great point. Bore an average of 3.3 children, okay? So this is the baby boom. They're the parenting versus 81% of GIs born a quarter century earlier who bore an average of 2.3 children. This was the only American generation whose college-educated women were more fertile, don't you love this, than those who did not complete secondary school. And so grandma and grandpa view marriage and babies differently. They just do. And so the whole idea of infertility, I think sometimes and I know they understand the reality of it, but it is intriguing when you look at these stats. What is the reason for this? Why is this happening? And these things are, to many of them, babies were just popping up like crazy. And so when it doesn't happen, then they're shocked. Like, did you ever have this growing up in church? Some of you didn't grow up in church. But I don't know how many, and I had silent generation that were just above, that I go all the way through college and I don't have a girl. I mean, I dated a couple of girls, but I didn't bring one home. What's wrong with you? I remember one time I'm sitting in a battle car. I think I've told you this story before, but I love this story. It's really funny to me. I'm with a bunch of pastor friends, and this is Jordan had just been drafted by the Bulls a few earlier. Michael Jordan, it's not the country of Jordan. And he's drafted by the Bulls, and he's enjoying life. Okay, not as much as Magic Johnson, but he's enjoying life. Okay. And at one point, I'm sitting in the car, and they start talking, and they say, "You know, Jordan, he doesn't have a wife yet? Is he gay?" And I'm sitting in the back seat, and I'm older than Jordan. I'm 2 years older than Jordan, and I don't have a wife. And I just tapped him on the shoulder, and I go, "I'm older than Michael Jordan." And then they're like, "Oh, shit." You know, they felt that, "Shut up," you know, and they felt bad and stuff like that. But in the older generation's mind, why aren't you married yet? What's wrong with you? And so I was constantly getting girl advice from these older guys. You know, what would help you? And maybe they were right? I don't think I just wasn't listening. I think I did okay. But it is one of those things where why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? Look at the changes for women. While silent men outpace GIs in educational achievement, silent women, I know some of you are like, oxymoron, silent women. Let's keep going. Show no gain. Now, silent man is funny too. Through the 1950s, new women entrants virtually disappeared from fields like engineering and architecture, where GI women had made important war era advances at like age. So remember Rosie the Riveter? All that different stuff was going on. Like, look at what we've accomplished. The war ends. Now they're into starting. That's what you're into? Don't you realize what we've advanced? So when you read about that word silent generation, there's something that bugs me about that, because they're actually one of the loudest generations in the area of getting stuff done. Educationally, silent generation, Brown versus Board of Education. I had opportunity, Mary Jane was telling me the story of that girl who ultimately had to walk through a mob to get to school. That little black girl walking through a mob to get to school. And National Guard troops had, and she prayed on her way for the people that were doing that. And George Wallace is at the door. We've seen that in your movie, Forrest Gump. Oh, wow. And but you see that and you think, wow, that silent generation, that out of the silent generation came one Martin Luther King Jr. rock and roll, which is amazing. That isn't very silent. Now how it's grown. The turning point there, that came out of the silent generation. Yes?
Who's the one who names these groups?
It's a lot of it is named based on the beginning. And the guys that are doing this are these guys, Strauss and Howe. Right. Now, Time Magazine did the silent generation.
No, but I mean, somebody is deciding what
correct
the group should be called.
Right.
Maybe they don't decide correctly.
Oh, definitely. Definitely not. Yeah, because a lot of times they're trying to make sense. I mean, think about what would be coming up, Generation X. They're actually called Baby Busters, and they don't even like that one. But most of the time, somebody isn't going to be happy with the name. That's what ends up happening with it. But we got to put some sort of moniker on it so people go, oh, that's the time that this is, you know, this was happening. Look at divorce. The late 20th century sexual revolution and divorce epidemic have affected the silent more than any other generation. From the 1950s to the 70s, they reported a larger age bracket increase in their frequency of sexual intercourse than any other, I don't know how they take that stat, than any other generation. Similarly, silent men and women born between 30s and early 40s showed the biggest age bracket jump in the divorce rate. And so that starts taking, stepping in. And then I look at this next paragraph as they're not so silent. Silent professionals account for the 1960s surge in the helping professions, teaching, medicine, ministry, government, 1970s explosion in public interest advocacy groups. And a lot of the great movements when it came to youth culture, I mean youth ministry, came out of this group. Awana. I don't know, as Child Evangelism Fellowship, I know it came in the 30s, but it really starts to take a lot of times. This time frame takes a huge amount of things are starting to happen. But look at non-whites. Silent Generation has produced virtually every major figure in the modern civil rights movement, from the Little Rock children to the youths at Greensboro lunch counter, from Martin Luther King Jr. to Malcolm X, from Cesar Chavez's Farm Workers Union to Russell Means' American Indian Movement. By 1989, 19 black silent have been elected to Congress. And so you see that. Then how they looked at meetings. In politics and business, the silent have proven a generation of bureaucratizers compared with the GI-dominated Congresses of the early 1960s. Silent Congresses in the mid-1980s convened twice as many hearings, debated for twice as many hours, hired four times as many staff, mailed six times as many letters to constituents, and enacted one-third as many laws. And so what would happen in this, how this affected church, and I want you to get an understanding of this, how this affected church was, they would have these long board meetings. I don't know if you grew up in church. How many of you grew up in church? Okay. Do you, and maybe you don't remember this, but I remember this. It seemed like this generation, I don't know if they did, but it seemed like they loved meetings. Like, we're going to have a deacon's meeting. We're going to suffer for Jesus through this thing. And they would go to midnight. And it was like a badge of honor. To midnight, to me, is like, wow, seriously? You can't get this? But they did meetings. And so when the younger generation comes up and they don't want to do meetings like that, they look at me, you must not care about God as much as I care about it. And they're not necessarily verbalizing that. But it's, well, some of them, no, trust me, they did. I heard those guys, all right? But they would look at that as, you must not be as into this as our generation was. Any observations? Observations about that kind of stuff.
Well,
yes?
The pendulum just swings back constantly. And forth constantly. So it just depends on, a lot has to do with what's happening with technology. When TV comes along, people know more. Hear more. It's been happening, but people hear more. All these things affect.
Yeah. That is a great observation that there's so many things that have happened in history. Like, I don't think, now this is just me, but I don't know if you knew what Nixon had to resign about. Okay. More than anything, it was the cover-up.
It wasn't necessarily what he did, because if what he did, there should be a lot more people that should be kicked out, okay? But it was the cover-up. I don't know if the Nixon thing had happened pre-World War II, if he would have had to resign. Because the trust for government was so high at that time. And so all of these things are like dominoes. They're, something happens and affects this. And so that's why I keep beating this drum of, we aren't going to just jump right into the millennials right away.
Well, now everything is instant.
Yeah, exactly.
It used to be instant.
Right, instant. I mean, we could go on and on about that. But my point is, I'm amening your point, is the fact that a lot of this has bearing, or a lot of these things are the way they are because of the times that we're living in. I know it sounds really obvious, but it helps make sense of certain things. Because while they're in the midst of that lady saying what she said about the silent generation, it doesn't even occur to her to think like a black person. It doesn't even occur to her. But the millennials, here's the respect that I have for them. They actually will take that into account. They'll think like that. They'll go, well, have you ever thought about, and you're like, oh, you're ruining Father Knows Best right now. Because if you watch even TV, when the black guy shows up for something in the TV show, have you ever watched Little Rascals and how they treat buckwheat? Would that ever fly today? It would fly in a comedy about the little bit. SNL could get away with it, maybe. But today, that show would be like, or that movie would be like, you racist. The song, the movie, you ever hear of the movie Songs in the South, or Songs from the South? It's a Disney movie with Uncle Remus, and they've got the tar baby in it. I challenge you to go try to find that DVD. You won't. Yeah, it doesn't exist. Why? Racism. Now, we don't know, it's just good stories. Uncle Remus, don't you? I'm just telling you. So, as time goes by, and say, oh, you're very sensitive about that. This Confederate flag, you get all these things. They look at it completely different. I have never gone to bat for Columbus Day more now than I ever did. I'm not, because I'm an Italian, okay, so we came in. But it is one of those things where I'm looking at it completely different than the younger generations. And so, exactly, I know that's a long way of saying exactly what Karen said, but the reality is how these things are viewed is when they land time-wise. Older silents are not silent. Look at the next. Opinion rules in silent-led America. In the 1990 election, voters confronted the largest number of citizen-initiated ballot measures since the Progressive Era election of 1914. The California ballot alone had 28 initiatives, accompanied by a two-volume, 230-page voter's guide. So out of the silent generation, this older group of people, they look at it as like, let's get an initiative. Let's get a rep. If you ever look at the things, that resolution stuff, all those initiatives, that was never voted on back in the day. That's become this thing that has just taken over. So when you and I go to the ballot box now, it's just part of the thing. And I'm constantly asking people that I think know, what am I supposed to vote on with this thing? That stuff didn't exist until the silent generation said, we're not going to be silent. We're going to say we want to resolve on this. We want to do this initiative. They usually pick the underdog. That's the next paragraph there. The silent are virtually guaranteed of reaching 1993, 68 years after their first birth, without producing a president. That's 12 years later than the average and 7 years later than any other generation from the Republicans on. And so basically, here's who they always picked. I mean, they had a lot of meetings, but they always picked Nixon over Kennedy, Humphrey over Nixon, and Ford over Carter. So most of the time when no offense to the silence, when you voted, you lost. But they weren't silent. They'd want to do it over again. Last paragraph. The silent are the only living generation whose members would rather be in some age bracket other than the one they now occupy. They look back on all of these things and they want to enjoy their midlife. And so they do all of these extra things. Well, let's look at this. I want to just read a couple things from the scriptures as we look at those that are older than us. And you can write this down in your notes. But God works in and through the elderly. We see Daniel, Daniel 9 and Daniel 10:1. He received two of his greatest revelations between the ages of 85 and 90. The Apostle John received the book of Revelation in exile on Patmos in his 80s or 90s. Samuel, 1 Samuel 12 says, aged and gray-headed, he prayed and the Lord performed a miracle to punish the errant Israelites. Anna, the prophetess, she's 84 years old. She's serving God with fasting and prayers night and day. Philemon chapter 1, verses 9 through 16, talks about Paul in his old age leading Onesimus to receive Christ. Aaron and Moses in Exodus chapter 7, God uses Aaron and Moses at the age of 80 and 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. That's how old they were when they confronted the king of Egypt. Joshua and Caleb. Joshua was given the charge of leading the conquest of Canaan during the last 30 years of his life. He lived until he was 110. So can you imagine an 80-year-old general, and they followed him? Noah, 600 years old when the floodwaters came on the earth. God's point is this: you're never done. Okay? You're never done. We're called to ministry. And so we look at this older generation and we say, we may not agree on everything and how we're supposed to go about it, but we're gonna listen to you and hear from you and be obedient to what God has called us. Now I want to open it up to you, observation-wise, or questions that you have concerning the silent generation.